Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radio Lab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radio Lab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Lair on WNYC. If we want to end mass incarceration in this country, one issue that needs to be tackled is recidivism, the return to jail by people who have previously served their time. WNYC Urban Affairs reporter Cindy Rodriguez this week looked into New York City's biggest recidivists to put them in social context and criminal justice system context in a piece called The Frequent Flyers of Rikers Island. Here's one of the people she interviewed at the Fortune Society on why his heroin addiction actually led him to want to go back to prison and get the maximum sentence he could.
I had, like, so much hate towards my mom because she was never there. We only had a father. He was drunk all the time.
Sorry, that was the wrong clip. We will hear interviewee later. Now the man who wants to go back to prison and get the maximum sentence he can.
Every time I went to jail, like, I always wanted to max out. I didn't want to come out with nothing because I knew the lifestyle that I was living, that I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it. You know, like, as far as being on parole, probation, I wasn't going to do it. So I had just wanted to max out. You know, my drug choice was heroin, and I was on it really, really bad. You know, I did the program, the treatment programs, long terms. I did all of that. Like, I had to relocate myself because if I would have still been there, I probably would have probably still either been in jail or I probably would be dead. You know, I'm still weak. I'm not all the way there yet. So when I go visit my family, they got to come pick me up at Penn Station, take me to where I'm going. When I'm coming back this way, they'll bring me back to the Penn Station to get back on the train. Like, it's still, I'm still struggling, you know. So, yeah, from 2013 to now, like, I'm doing really, really good.
Now WNYC Cindy Rodriguez joins us on her piece, The Frequent Flyers of Rikers Island. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Brian.
And that was a woman, obviously. I said, man, you interviewed. Funny enough, I had read the transcript of that before the segment, but I hadn't heard the but I actually hadn't heard her voice, shows my bias when thinking about long-term recidivists. What percentage of them are men, do you know?
It's actually a huge percentage. The majority are men, so your bias is acceptable.
At least based on something.
Yes.
The city recently published a study on 800 of these so-called frequent flyers. Who do they tend to be?
Well, so the study, I wanted to just explain a little bit about the study and how it came to be. So, you know, at Rikers Island, there is the Department of Corrections that's in charge of, you know, the law enforcement aspect of keeping the jail safe and in control. But there's also the Bureau of Correctional Health, and the Bureau of Correctional Health is in charge of providing physical health and mental health care, and they also treat substance abuse. So they look at incarceration through a public health lens. So they are interested in whether their interventions are working, but they really question whether, you know, they're just there to really mitigate all the risks of jail and whether jail is really making these conditions that they're treating much worse.
And some of the stats on the 800 people studied along those lines, together they had more than 18,000 admissions to Rikers. You quote law enforcement sources describing them as serving life sentences 15 days at a time. And notably, they are older and sicker than the average inmate. And so if they're older and sicker and weaker, are they committing many violent crimes?
No, they're not. And so another indication of this is the amount of times that they're cycling in and out. If they were committing more serious crimes, they would be in there for longer periods of time. But since these are minor offenses, this is jail, not prison, they are cycling in much more frequently. And so, yeah, they are, you know, they're 42. Their average age was 42 versus 35 of a more general population. They are 19% seriously mentally ill. 51% had homelessness in their history. But the biggest, the starkest statistic for me was 97% had substance abuse issues.
And You describe Rikers as the end result of a cycle. Can you describe that cycle?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot that happens before somebody ends up at Rikers. So a police officer is making the decision to arrest somebody. A prosecutor is making the decision to go forward with charges. A judge is setting bail or sentencing someone, and then somebody ends up at Rikers. So there are all these steps that have to take place prior to that.
And here's another multiple-time recidivist you interviewed at the Fortune Society, which is a group that works with inmates and on prison policy. He talks about his parents and his son.
I had, like, so much hate towards my mom because she was never there. We only had a father. He was drunk all the time, so who we had? We only had ourselves. That's what made me go on the streets. People would listen to me out in the streets. They give you a pack, you're going to sell. They listen to all your problems. As long as their money come up correct, everything is everything. But I just got tired this last one. I said, I can't go back to jail. My son told me, he's 20 years old. He told me, he said, you don't like your mother. You have hate towards your mother. I said, yeah. He said, what if I have that towards you? Because you wasn't there neither. That made me look at the whole picture. Like, do I really hate this lady for not being here? Or was I mad because she left? I was more hurt than I was mad.
And obviously that also was a woman, but very moving and very sad. I guess it's the family psychology basis of a life of crime that she was laying out. Does a story like that suggest any policy solutions?
I think that the policy solution that the Bureau of Correctional Health came up with is that instead of jailing people, you give them supportive housing because it's proven to reduce incarcerations. It's proven to reduce homelessness. It's proven to just create a more stable person. And the city actually did come forward with their plan this week to create 15,000 units of supportive housing.
Right. And was that, to what extent was that 15,000 units of supportive housing, which I think was a little bit of a surprise. People weren't expecting that announcement right now from the de Blasio administration.
Right.
Was that a response to the ongoing problems at Rikers? Was that a response to pressure in the tabloids to do something about homelessness, which people are at least perceiving to be more of a presence on the street? What do you think?
Well, I can say that about a year ago, this task force released a report that was supposed to be looking at ways to divert people from Rikers Island. And in that task force report a year ago, they spoke about creating more supportive housing. So I know that it's been in the works for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I know that typically this agreement is called a New York-New York agreement because it's the city and the state together combining funds to fund this supportive housing. That didn't happen this time, and the city went out on its own. So you might argue that's because of this urgent need to address this problem.
And I think the de Blasio folks frame that to some degree on it being, you know, around it being less expensive than dealing with homeless people in other ways. And there's a public expense component to the cycle that you reported on, which is that serious recidivists tend to need more medical care than other inmates, and also that the most expensive part is just admitting them to Rikers.
Right, that's right. So it's $129 million that they cost over 6 years versus about $38 million for a more general population. So, yes, they are very expensive, and that's the argument of supportive housing, that it would be a cheaper way to go.
You have that stat that 800 inmates who the city analyzed as multiple-time recidivists cost the taxpayers $129 million, as you said, over 6 years. I think this is also why more Republicans nationally are getting on board with ending or reducing mass incarceration.
Yeah, I think that's true. And this is sort of a nationwide movement to change the way these low-level offenders are treated. So, for instance, in Seattle, law enforcement there, instead of booking somebody for a low-level drug offense or for prostitution, is connecting them with a case manager, and that case manager is supposed to be getting them social services. And not too long ago, police chiefs from L.A., Chicago, Dallas, Houston were out talking about similar things.
One of our listeners tweets, it's called Doing Life on the Installment Plan. due to a myriad of obstacles, some self-inflicted, some not. Very few ever pay it off, doing life on the installment plan. And you had that other quote that I referred to before from law enforcement people who call it a life sentence 15 days at a time.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, some of these people that I talked to, the man at the very beginning of my frequent flyers piece, his name is Ira Davis. He's a 65-year-old man, and he often gets arrested for panhandling. And, you know, these are very transient people, so it was difficult to find some of them. But I did find him at the spot that he was always getting arrested at. And, you know, he had a life before all of this. He worked at Brooklyn Gas, he said, for many years. He wouldn't quite open up and tell me what it was that went wrong or when it went wrong.
So where does this pretty small group of frequent flyers fit into the larger picture of being a nation that imprisons people so much and trying to do something now in a larger sense about mass incarceration?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess, you know, it struck me in this report from the Bureau of Correctional Health that they talk about how mass incarceration has led to criminalizing social problems like drug problems and mental illness. And so, you know, it is I think in many localities, it's a pretty significant portion of the population that could be handled a different way.
WNYC Urban Affairs reporter Cindy Rodriguez, you can hear at WNYC.org her full piece on the frequent flyers of Rikers Island. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian.